The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So tonight I'd like to speak about the wandering mind. When we're given the instructions for meditation, we're usually told to anchor our attention on one particular object, such as the breath or body sensations, and to try to stay with that experience. And what we tend to notice when we do that is that our mind wanders off of that object. And so we bring it back, and we try again, and then it wanders off, and then we come back, and it wanders off. So that's a large part of what happens to us as we try to follow these instructions to bring our mind into the present moment. So we can't do much about the wandering mind while it's going on. While it's happening, we basically don't have much control over it at all. And we can't make ourselves come out of that wandering. Oftentimes when we remember, when we recognize or remember that we were paying attention to the present moment and that we kind of come back into the present moment and remember that we weren't paying attention to the thing we had intended to pay attention to, often we have a sense of needing to come back to our meditation object. And oftentimes that's the instruction given, that when you recognize your mind has wandered, come back. Well, I'd like to propose that when you remember that your mind has wandered, when you actually have that moment of recognition, you're already back. You're already mindful at that point. And so I want to talk about this moment of remembering and ways to work with, ways to explore our wandering mind. So we can, let's just talk for a moment about how we recognize that the mind has wandered off. Oftentimes we recognize that we're no longer paying attention to the thing that we intended to pay attention to. If we're anchoring on the breath, we wake up in the midst of some thought, and we notice, in fact, what we notice is that we're no longer paying attention to the breath. And that actual discrepancy is what triggers our remembering. I had planned to be paying attention to the breath. So that's probably the most common way that people wake up in the midst of a meditation, is they notice in the midst of a thought of some kind, either some kind of thinking about the past or thinking about the future, that, oh, there I am thinking about the past, and I had been intending to pay attention to my breath. So probably the very most common way people notice this phenomenon of wandering mind. Another way that it sometimes happens, some of you may have experienced this, where you're paying attention to your breath and your mind wanders off and you don't notice it, and somewhere in that process of wandering off, it wanders back to the breath. And at some point then you recognize, oh, I'm breathing again, but I know I wasn't here a minute ago. And so you kind of remember that you were thinking, but you're already back. You're already back with the breath. So partly why I'm talking about this, or one of the things I want to explore about the wandering mind, is that it kind of points out to us that our mind is out of control. It's a very clear signal to us that we don't have much control over what our mind does. We have very little control over the fact that it wanders off. We have a little tiny bit of control over that. We have no control over how long it stays wandering, and we have no control over when we remember to wake up. So we usually think of these things as problems, the fact that that we don't have control over the mind like this, that we sit down, we intend to bring our attention to our breath, and the mind wanders. That's a problem. We're supposed to come back. It's a problem when it wanders. But actually, it represents the recognition of a very deep truth, that we don't have control over our minds. We think, when we sit down to meditate, we think we intend to pay attention to the breath. And what we find is that the mind has wandered off. Who did that? Who did that wandering? I mean, if you had control over it, it wouldn't wander. Really, what causes that wandering to happen is habits of mind. Tendencies that are built into us through our years of conditioning. If we actually recognize what's happening in that moment, that wandering, it points in a very clear way, actually, to what's called the characteristic of anatta, a characteristic of not self. This characteristic, it's a characteristic of all of our experience, this fact that things are not ours. They're not, nothing is mine, nothing is me, nothing is who I am. So I'll just give a little brief kind of definition of anatta. It really points to the ephemeral nature of our experience, the fact that all of our experience is in the process of continual process of flux, that experience is a process, not a thing. So, for instance, an example of something that maybe we can understand this quality of not self is if you think about a rainbow. A rainbow kind of looks like a thing. It looks like something that is there. We can all see it. We can all talk about it. We all kind of, when we're driving down the road, we can say, oh, look at the rainbow, and the other person sees it. It's pretty much, we recognize it as being there. But we know what a rainbow is a particular configuration of light coming from the sun, of rain in the sky, and the particular positioning of the light and the rain, as well as the positioning of us in the car, in where we are looking at the rainbow. Those three things all have to be together in order for the rainbow to appear. So it's really a phenomena that's a process, not a thing. It's dependent on conditions that the rainbow comes into existence. So somebody, you know, a few miles away may not see the rainbow because of the particular configuration of light and sun, I mean, sun and rain, and where they are. So it's got an existence that depends on conditions. All of our experience is really like this, this kind of ephemeral quality. And we don't usually see our experience this way. We usually see it in terms of things. We see it in terms of me doing things. And because we have this belief or this view that I am a person, that I do things, that I exist, it filters everything that we see. And everything that we see pretty much seems to confirm that we exist. So we don't see our experience. What we experience confirms the fact that I am here. That's how we take in our experience. But it's seen through this filter that I believe I exist. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we don't actually take in experience and recognize it as confirming the opposite. We don't take in experience and see it as evidence for not-self. And the wandering mind is just such a piece of evidence. Over and over again, we really get this evidence coming to us that there's no control, that I didn't intend to do that thing, but there it is. Who wakes up? That's the other piece of it. Here you're lost in thought and suddenly you're back. Who does that? Where were you when you were lost in thought? Who were you when you were lost in thought? Were you a different you? So there's actually evidence for this. So it's actually, I think it's a very interesting phenomenon to explore, this phenomenon of the wandering mind. Partly I encourage you to develop some curiosity around it, because it makes it a little easier to explore when we get more curious about phenomena. I think I should have time later. Yeah. So it's developing a skillful relationship with this wandering mind is probably one of the keys to our meditation practice. Typically what happens to us when our mind wanders is that when we remember, we judge ourselves. We beat ourselves up for the fact that our mind has wandered. Like, oh, I'm such a terrible meditator. I'm never going to be able to figure this out. And everybody else seems to be sitting so peacefully. And here my mind is just going off all over the place. So when we really start to recognize and appreciate the fact that it is out of our control that the mind is wandering, and pretty much out of our control when we wake up, we start to understand that it is just pointless to judge ourselves for it. There's no point in judging ourselves for something that we don't have control over. So there's some things I'd like to suggest people explore about this, particularly kind of on both sides of the wandering mind. You know, the part where you're waking up, that's the part that's easiest to explore, because you're coming back into awareness, coming back into remembering. But you can also explore it on the other side. You can explore the mind kind of just beginning to let go of what it's paying attention to. I'll talk about both sides of it. So it can be interesting to explore actually the very moment when you first recognize that you've remembered. What does that feel like, to remember awareness? It's kind of like a light goes on. It's kind of like there's a brightness or a clarity to the mind as it comes back into presence. So what does it feel like to now be here? Take an interest in, see if you can take an interest in noticing what it now feels like to be aware when a few minutes ago you were not aware. Now, we can't really know exactly what it's like to be lost in thought, but in the moment when we wake up, in the moment when we remember, there's a kind of a lingering memory of what it was like to be lost in thought. And so there's a kind of a contrast. You can see the difference in that moment of waking up, what it was like to be lost and what it is now like to be here. And that begins to highlight what it feels like to be aware. We begin to get familiar with what does it feel like to be here. As we get familiar with that feeling of what it feels like to be here, what it feels like to be present right now, just being here. Do you know that you're sitting here? And that, what does that feel like to know that you're here in this moment? It's a pretty subtle feeling, actually. And for me, it was hard to grok or to kind of understand what it means to be present. But I found that this moment of waking up was kind of, for me at least, it was a way to learn what it feels like to be present, what presence, what the experience of presence is. Because there was this contrast between the kind of haziness or fuzziness of being lost and the, oh, it's just kind of like the light goes on, or there's a brightness and a knowing that's happening. So as we begin to recognize that feeling of presence, it begins to wake us up when it happens. Now that may sound a little funny, but essentially this moment, these moments of being here, being aware, moments of mindfulness happen to us all the time throughout the day. They are happening so much that we don't even have a clue how much they're happening. But what we don't notice or appreciate is the value of noticing it. What we think we're supposed to do with our noticing is to pay attention to the thing that we're noticed, that we've noticed. We don't think at all about looking at the noticing itself. That's like noise, not important. We instead, what happens to us is that we notice something, and all the time throughout the day, we couldn't get through our day without mindfulness. We couldn't get through our day without knowing what's happening to us while it's happening. That's what I think of as a kind of a good working definition for mindfulness. That we couldn't get through our day without, in brief spurts of time, knowing what's happening to us while it's happening. So we get up and we, you know, walk out there and we get our shoes and we go out the door and we get in our car and we drive in. And little spurts of time, we know what we're doing while we're doing it. But typically what we do is as soon as we see something, say, oh, shoes, got to get my shoes, got to put them on, got to make sure I got the right shoes. Maybe I picked up somebody else's shoes. So we leap into the object that we've noticed. And we often will spend time thinking about it. And we think that's what we're supposed to do with our noticing, is to pay attention to the object and to think about it. That's how we've been trained. That's what we have learned from our conditioning, that that's how we're supposed to relate to that knowing. And it was truly a brilliant discovery, I think, that the Buddha had, that it is worth paying attention to that knowing itself, just to pay attention to that mindful quality itself. And why? Why is it worth paying attention to that mindful quality itself? Because it allows us to see how our minds function. It allows us to notice all of these habitual tendencies that we... typically we think of our conditioning, our habitual tendencies, all of the habits and conditionings of mind as almost being subconscious, not accessible to our normal state of awareness. And it's actually, I'd say, maybe in our normal state of awareness of leaping onto something and then stopping and thinking about it and, you know, just continually going into thinking mode. It is below our normal state of awareness. But it actually doesn't take too much. If we just start paying attention to what we're experiencing and recognizing this knowing, recognizing the fact that mindfulness is happening, for all of those habits and patterns to become very obvious, very clear. When we sit down to meditate, we start to get a view into these habits and patterns. By looking at the wandering mind, one of the things we get to see is how our minds function. So we're looking at our paying attention to our breath, the mind wanders. And when we wake up in that wandering, we can typically know what we're doing in that moment. We can recognize that we're planning, or we're remembering, or we're fantasizing. So we can get a little bit of a clue as to kind of the frequent patterns that our mind goes into. You may notice, if you have been meditating for any time, that you have particular favorite ways to get stuck. You know, that you end up always planning or always lost in Fiji, wherever you go for a holiday. So that gives you some instruction about what your habits of mind are. So looking, observing what's going on when you wake up gives you a little bit of a window into that normally subconscious world. And that subconscious world of habits and conditioning is really where a lot of our suffering is born from. We have habits of greed and aversion, habits of wanting things to be a particular way or not wanting things to be a particular way. And without seeing them, we just continually reinforce these habits of greed and aversion. When we want something and we hold on to it, that's another habit, is the holding on to things, thinking that we can somehow hold on to things that are in continual flux. And when we hold on to things that are in continual flux, they change, they disappear, and we suffer. So mindfulness reveals all of this and offers us a pathway to letting go of that clinging, letting go of those habits. Now, it's not something that happens overnight. It's not something that happens sitting down to meditate for a week or two or even 5 or 10 years. It's a long, slow process. But through the whole course of that process, it's like the mindfulness is weakening those patterns, weakening those habits, weakening those tendencies. There's an analogy that Gill has used of chopping wood. So if you've got to, you know, put a piece of wood on its end, a big one, and you've got a hatchet and you come down on it, it's not going to break the first time you come down on it, most likely. You're going to have to hit it quite a few times before it will finally just cleave like that. But it's not that you've hit it wrong those first 25 times. It was necessary to hit it those times. The fibers inside the wood were weakening. And that, you know, then that one time the hatchet comes down and finally the fibers are weak enough that it splits. So there's been change going on in there that's just not so obvious. And mindfulness kind of functions in that way, that we observe our patterns, we observe our habits of mind over and over again and think nothing is happening. It's like, I've seen this aversion 1,000 times. Nothing is happening. And then one time we actually see it's coming into being. We see a thought coming into being, and we see it's just completely a formation of the mind. And perhaps that moment is the splitting of the wood, where we actually see a pattern as just an empty process in the mind. So mindfulness, bringing our mindfulness to our experience slowly over time, weakens the fibers, the kind of ingrained fibers of those habits. So most people, in terms of the wandering mind, most people are familiar with several basic categories. You know, we're either remembering the past or thinking about the future or thinking about the present. You know, that the mind has kind of wandered into one of those three rough areas. But those aren't the only reasons why the mind can wander. And this is another reason why it can be helpful to take an interest in the wandering mind. So often what we think when our mind starts wandering is that, well, I'm obviously not concentrated, or I'm not being mindful enough if the mind is wandering. We've got that kind of judgment around the wandering mind. But actually there are conditions in our meditation where the mind will start to wander when the mind is getting settled. So for instance, there's some kind of basic ways this happens. As we kind of just begin to relax, as the mind begins to relax, sometimes there's something underneath that has been kind of held in place through a kind of a tension or a holding. And through the relaxation process, that thing is no longer held kind of repressed, and it can erupt. A sudden eruption of a memory from the past, and a whole flood of feeling can happen. And thinking arises around that. And it's not an indication that you've done anything wrong or that you've stopped functioning, the meditation has stopped functioning in any way. It's actually a sign that the meditation is working, that it's loosening the normal ways that our mind functions. And things can begin to be seen. Things that we hadn't allowed into our consciousness are able to come in. It's also possible that as the mind starts getting more concentrated, that the mind starts to settle into the present moment and comes into a place of more stillness, of steadiness, of just being right with the breath, just hanging out right there. And suddenly you start to notice all of these like weird images of people you don't know and like dreams, you know, like weird things happening. A shirt with two heads coming out of it, or a dog's head floating through the air, or, you know, just stuff. That usually is a sign that the mind has gotten into a more concentrated state, and that there's just not quite enough energy in the system to keep it from going into a kind of a dreamlike quality. Typically, you can distinguish this from sleepiness, because when you're sleepy, you're doing this. And in that dreamlike state, you're usually still kind of up. You know, your body is still alert. And you're just getting these, like, drifty images. So that's an indication that there's not quite enough energy to meet the concentration. The mind has settled into a level of concentration that's deeper than the energy's ability to support it. So when you notice that, you can do a couple of just some simple things. There's a few simple techniques that we can use. One is to open your eyes. Just the simple opening of your eyes brings light in. And light brings energy into the system. You can just subtly straighten your spine, and that can add some energy to your system. So those are some physical things you can do. You can also stand up, but that's pretty gross. I mean, it can disrupt the concentration to make that big of a shift. And if you're not falling asleep, I mean, if you're not actually falling asleep, you probably don't need that much of a change. So some other things you can try are more mental than physical. You can consciously direct your attention into a more precise recognition of what's happening. So, bring your attention right to the tip of your nose or right to your navel. And just notice that little size. It's the size of a quarter. That kind of act of focusing the mind that way adds a little energy to the system. Another way to add some energy is to use the noting technique, which is a technique of labeling experience, of just using some words in your mind to label what's happening. And in that state of that kind of drifty state, probably you're experiencing calm or peace or tranquility or pleasantness. So you could just use those words. Just once a second, calm, tranquil, peaceful. And again, that inclination to add the word, add some energy to the system. So we can also begin to notice the beginning of the wandering mind. So I've been mostly talking about noticing it in the middle of the wandering mind, that you kind of recognize in the moment that you're drifting off into thought or having dreamlike images. But you can also, as I said at the beginning, we have very little control over when the mind wanders, but we have a little bit. We can actually notice, I think beginning meditators often feel that you're either here and knowing what's happening or you're lost and there's no in between. But actually, as we start getting a little bit more familiar with our experience and familiar with what it feels like to be paying attention to our experience, we can start to notice the kind of losing contact with what we're paying attention to. So, you know, we're paying attention to the breath and we just start to notice a little bit of loss of interest or just a little drifting off of that clear attention. So it's possible in that noticing to bring the attention back into more clarity. That's kind of just beginning to drift. And you can notice that and bring the mind back to our primary object. But you can also play with this, because I found at one point playing with this on a retreat, I was noticing that the moment that I was seeing the mind wandering off of the breath, and I was pretty much staying with the breath, and I would kind of notice it begin to lose its interest and lose its contact with the breath, and be, oh, okay, come back. And at some point I recognized that in that drifting off, I knew I was drifting off. You know, I was present for that drifting off. So there, again, it was that kind of aha moment. There's nothing to come back to. I'm already present for this movement of the mind away from the breath. So I decided at that point to just, well, let's see where it wants to go. And, you know, just being present for that releasing just opened me into a very open, spacious awareness that I had never touched before, through just that, oh, let's just see what the mind itself is doing and kind of hanging out with that movement. So you can play with these things. There's no right or wrong. So I really encourage you to take an interest in how your mind works around this wandering. I found so many little insights about how the mind works. And again, you know, kind of doorways into places I never knew were possible, just through paying attention to this wandering mind. So that's probably enough in terms of from me, so I'll open it for any questions or comments. Pesha.
Please wait for the microphone.
Oh, the mic.
Okay. Am I, can you hear me?
Doesn't sound like it's on. There's a little switch on the bottom.
Okay. When you spoke about us not having any or very little control over our mind, I remembered when I first started meditating, it would take me a long time to be aware that I'm not focusing on the breath. The more I meditated, the quicker it became.
Yes.
So if I didn't have the Buddhist practice, I would be off daydreaming and never coming back.
Yes.
So we have that little bit of control, right?
Well, we have a little. I mean, it's a very little bit. I mean, essentially, what happens with the practice is that we're introduced to this topic of mindfulness, and it's pointed out to us that this is interesting or useful to pay attention to. So we are given that information. And with that little bit of information, it conditions us to notice that our mind has wandered off. And as we start to notice that, we start to notice it more quickly. It's pretty much, you know, it's all conditioned essentially from there. From, you know, we get this instruction, and then it's almost like magic. Because we do have very little control. It's just like a little bit of input in a particular direction will steer the battleship of the mind. You know, it'll start to turn the mind into a more productive direction with just this knowing about paying attention to what's happening in the moment.
Concentration. Isn't that the same?
I can't quite hear you.
Isn't that the same that we mean by concentration?
Concentration is, there are different qualities, mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness is the quality of knowing what's happening while it's happening. And concentration is the quality of kind of sticking to what's happening. And that sticking to can come in a couple different ways. So the concentration can manifest by kind of coming into the moment, into a particular experience like the breath, and just staying with the breath. And then the mind gets really kind of absorbed into the breath. And it gets very still and very quiet and very peaceful. And there can be not too much mindfulness in that state. You know, that there's a little bit of mindfulness, but it's primarily just absorbed into the experience. And then there's a kind of concentration that is more closely connected with mindfulness, and that is a moment-to-moment knowing of what's happening. So moment-to-moment we know what's happening, and that continuity of knowing moment-to-moment what is happening develops a concentration, which is essentially a stability on the present moment itself. It's not a stability on any particular object, but it's a stability on being able to be with the present moment. And that's concentration. It's not so much the knowing side, it's the stability or the collectedness of mind that's the concentration.
I hope this doesn't just sound semantic, but I have heard it described as the observer, that the knowing, that the experiencing the knowing is actually a quality. And that word helped me, but I noticed you consciously didn't use it. I wonder if there's a problem with it.
No, there's not a problem with it particularly. It's often a very helpful tool in terms of, you know, there's kind of a, you know, there's the thing we're experiencing and then there's the knowing of it. And we can kind of land more in the knowing side, and it feels like an observer. It feels like something is kind of separated from the experience and kind of observing the experience. It's not the only way it can feel. So there can be a way in which it's almost like the knowing is kind of coming up from the inside of the experience, and it's not separate from the experience. So, you know, if people are looking at the observing or the knowing as being one thing, as only being this separation from experience, they might miss the possibility of the other way of experiencing it. So I like to leave it for people to kind of explore in their own way. What do they notice? If you're noticing that observer, that's great. I mean, that is a way it is experienced. Leave open the possibility that there may be another way it can be known.
Thank you.
Jim, yeah. This will probably be the last one.
One of the things that I've noticed is that, you know, I'll take a couple of breaths and then I'll see my mind wandering for a couple of breaths and then it will come back. And I'll name it. And it's all, it feels like my mind is multitasking.
So you're kind of aware of the breath, but you're also aware of this fact that
right.
this thinking is
going on. And
then
I come back to my breath, and then it's almost like, okay, I'm multitasking again, and I'm going off to this other thing, and then it comes back, and it just makes me smile. I wonder if they do that in other cultures, too. Or
I think it's probably a function of the mind. that's a kind of a common thing, to have the, you know, feeling like there's kind of two things happening. Now, again, you might play with, if it depends on what that other thing is. You know, if that other thing is a thoughtful process where you're actually planning or trying to solve some kind of a problem or figure something out, it's probably helpful to just see if you can let that go and come back to the breath. If that other thing is more of those dreamlike qualities or, you know, just kind of a letting go of the breath. So I have found at times, actually, the movement of the mind wandering is actually a movement of letting go. A letting go of actually holding on to the breath. So, you know, it sometimes can be interesting to just let the mind let go of the breath, kind of like I was describing, and see what there is in that space of having let go. Now, you need to take care with that, because it's so easy for the mind to then just get lost off into thought. But as long as you are aware, it can be a very interesting thing to explore. So, you know, depending on how the mind is going off, it can be, you know, just let it do its thing and just observe it. Or you may want to consciously intervene. But it sounds like you have a pretty good relationship to it. Since you're smiling, which I like to encourage, it's really great to be able to be amused by our minds. They're great. They're an endless source of amusement. And if we can approach our minds in that way, it's much easier to not get so frustrated and to, like, you know, we take our minds way too seriously, I think. So we need to stop. So thank you all for your attention. May our practice tonight be supportive of the liberation for all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy, healthy, safe, peaceful. May all beings be free from suffering.